last week I introduced you all to at least one of our home visitors. See the camera back there? That's where our home visitors are watching from. At least, I know there's usually at least one. Her name is Eileen. And so last week we figured out, you know, that's why we have people hold a mic when they ask questions, so the people in the home at home can hear your questions and to save time. So at some point, maybe when we do the test, I'm going to have, if you all don't mind, on the side to sit over here so it's easier to pass the mic back and forth instead of going all the way across the room and yada, yada. It makes it easier, I think. Okay, so let's just start, though, by doing a brief meditation. So if you're new or relatively new, we start, you know, every practice with setting our intention. Because before every action anyway, we have some kind of intention in our mind, which is why if you have committed some crime, the courts are going to try to figure out what your intention was, right? Or the police are going to try to figure out what your motive was. We always have a motive. But what we try to do here is try to set our motive and intention to the very highest level that we possibly can. So first we just get into a nice, comfortable meditative posture, making sure your back is straight. And going through the 7 points, making sure that if you're sitting in a chair, your feet are flat on the floor. If you'd like, you can have your hands in the traditional posture, which is left hand right under your navel, right palm on top, with your thumbs just gently touching as though you're holding a little piece of paper there. And place them like this little circle right below your navel, elbows out away from your body so that your breathing isn't cramped. Again, make sure your spine is as straight as possible, like coins stacked and balanced. And then you tuck your chin just a little bit to bring the back of your head up. Not the top of your head, but the back, the crown. And check your jaw. Make sure it's not clenched. You put your tongue at the back of your front teeth, which helps relax that jaw and actually prevents you from drooling if you get very relaxed. Then you close your eyes or keep them a little bit open so the light comes in and keeps you awake, and also so there's not this big distinction between inner and outer. And now you put all your attention on your breath. And one inhalation, one exhalation is counted as one. The next set is two. So try to keep your mind on that, counting up to 5 or to 10, whichever you prefer. And with each exhalation, feel the worries and thoughts and concerns and stress of the day just melt off of you. And as you inhale, try to inhale bright, fresh, pure energy, letting it fill every cell of your body. And then exhale all of the buildup and thoughts and activities of the day. And just go on like that for a couple of minutes. When your mind starts to drift, just gently bring it back to the object of focus, which is your breath. Just be kind and gentle to your mind. Let every thought go as though it's just a wave rising up and then letting go, but don't follow it. Just let it go. Now take a minute to review your day and think of all the people and beings that you came in contact with. And as we've been discussing equalizing ourselves and others, think about what you have in common with all the different people you've encountered today. Remembering that what you share with everyone is a wish to be happy and a wish to avoid suffering. So even with the people who irritated us today or got in our way, try to search for that commonality. Just looking for that and then moving on to the next person. Not judging your actions or theirs, just looking for that commonality. And try to imagine what it would be like if that was the first thing you saw in others. Instead of our differences, or how people are blocking us or helping us, or how good they look or don't look, that what we saw was what we had in common with them. And now take some time to focus on your motivation and reason for being here. If you're wanting to learn more about this practice that helps tame our minds, just the effort you took to get here today. The effort for those of you who've been reading the articles, preparing for the test. Think of all of that and try to increase your motivation in whatever way you're able to. So if you came here to try to learn some more information, think how beneficial it will be to yourself and all those around you. And you can achieve your goals. And so in this way, we try to increase our goal to not only include ourselves, but those around us, and even those we don't know. That by taking this test or helping others or sharing information during the discussion, asking questions, setting up the room, videotaping this, or whatever it's called, how that these actions can lead, since one thing leads to another, to our complete and perfect enlightenment. So with that motivation in mind, then slowly open your eyes. So I have an idea. Some of you may be surprised to have walked into a test. You don't have to take it. Nobody here has to take it. I had to make it, but you don't have to take it. it was not that hard to make. So what I'm going to do, I've decided to make this very easy and very inclusive, since probably not a whole lot of people are taking it. First, raise your hand if you are taking it. You all are taking it. One. You're not taking it? Put you on the spot there. Yeah, and raise your hands back there. Okay, one, two, three, four, five. Have I got a six? Anybody got a six? Okay. So, all right. So what I'm going to do is, how many of there are you? I'm going to have the test takers pair up with the non-test takers. So there'll be more of you non-test takers than test takers. We can put more pressure on the test takers. What I want to do is I'm going to pass out these tests, and we're going to read them together. I mean, I'll read the first question. I don't really know really why I printed this, because I'm reading it. But if you want to jot something down, and then I'm going to pass out the answers later. So everybody here who came will have the answers and the questions when you walk out, so that you'll be able to keep those if you want. A little souvenir. But so we'll go through question one, and the people who are in the audience around that test taker will listen to the person's answer, and then we'll all talk about the answer, so that people at home who are hopefully taking the test at home will also hear the answer, and then we'll move to number two and any questions you have about number one. And they're really not many, and they're relatively simple questions. I mean, they're not like this long dissertation you're going to have to give except one. Okay, so let's pass these out. And you want to help me over there? Thanks. Just take one and pass it back. And so if you're a test taker, why don't you come sit on this side, and then I'm going to have test watchers. Make sure you're not cheating. come around you. You're going to give the answer to them so that you don't have to write it. And so it's just going to be this. Okay, so if you're taking the test, one of the people who raised your hands, come and sit over here so I know who you are. I think that'll be the easiest. Yeah, you can do it. Thanks. I'm not going to be collecting it. So, you know, for those of you who want the certificate, I need to make sure that your test listeners, that you got, you know, majority of these correct. Okay, so those are the test takers. All right, so, okay. What'd you say? She's the microphone lady. Okay. So now what I want you all to do is go and pick one of those people, sit with one of them, so that they have one or two people to tell their answers to. And then you can go sit anywhere you want. Just go and find one of them. You can sit right there. You can. But I want everybody to be with somebody, unless you really don't want to do either one. I'm not big into, like, forcing anybody to do something they don't want. But go and find one of the test takers. And then you can move somewhere else because it might be a little noisy. And if somebody already has one listener, you can come up here. Even though he already has somebody, it's okay to have two or three. Oh, Ryan, you're not taking it? Oh man, how come?
Oh, you are? Really? Yeah. Okay.
On the last line, so.
Oh, did you? Okay. In the one that I was with?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, just take a look at it, because I'm sure you would pass it. Okay. All right. So look, if he passes it, you passed it. Okay? And then, so you're trying for the certificate? Are you still doing that? Well, here's what we'll do. If you pass the test, you'll get the completion card, because you came to every single test. That way, then at the very end, if you decide, like, you want to go back, you want the certificate, maybe there'll only be one or two modules that you have to take the test for, and you can do that online. Okay? Because so you just let me know how many he gets close to, okay?
All right, so the first question is, what is the definition of bodhicitta? And, you know, for some of you giving your answer, you're giving your answer to people who are relatively new to coming in to DB, so you're teaching them now. You're just like, you're up here. You're leading the class. What is bodhicitta? What is the definition of bodhicitta? So now you can answer your question, and then in about, should be like a 2-minute, 3-minute answer. You don't have to go on for this long thing. What's the definition of bodhicitta? And then we'll all talk about it. Okay, so. No, not yet. No. Okay, so go for it. Oops. Is everybody finished with that? Okay. Raise your hands if you're finished with that answer. Okay. You all in the back? Y'all finished with that? Okay. All right. I don't want to cut anybody off if they need more time, so you just let me know. So what's the definition of bodhicitta for our home audience? Anybody want to shout it out? You're so shy. You were just talking with each other. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Wait, we need the mic. Now we need the mic. I've never seen you all so crowded. It's kind of cute. Usually you're like, oh, the creation. It's like you're on a bus. Okay, definition of bodhicitta.
From the back of the bus.
You're in the back of the bus.
And this could be wrong, but I believe that it is seeking to achieve your own enlightenment so that you can help other people achieve enlightenment and continuing in the cycle of life so that you continue to help people. So you don't leave the cycle. As long as there are people who are suffering, then you're here to help them.
Okay, well, that last part's a little dicey. We'll get to that. But the first part, yes, the altruistic wish to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. Bodhi means what? Awakened. And citta means mind. So bodhicitta is the mind awakened from ignorance. Now, when you get to, when we talked last week about the different paths, that when you reach this one path, you no longer are producing the kind of karma that keeps you in cyclic existence. And actually, you had a question for me about, well, if you're not producing karma, how can you become enlightened? I don't know your name back there, but you remember that question? So I asked Geshe-la, and he said, you're producing that kind of karma, but you're not producing samsaric karma. You're not producing the kind of negative karma that keeps you cycling through samsara. But so when you reach that path where you're no longer bound in samsaric existence, you're still creating this virtuous karma that will allow you to make that last final leap to complete enlightenment.
I've been reading the Bodhicitta Vows, and it seems like an important point that's repeated over and over again, that as long as there are diseases in the world, may I be their medicine, their doctor, their nurse, and all, and it emphasizes that you don't leave, that you are there as long as they're suffering. Is that not part of the definition?
Okay, well, there's a couple different ways to answer that. One is that you, at a certain point, you can choose to come back in different forms. So, but that you're not coming back because you're bound by this. You're not coming back. What's the right word I'm thinking of? Like a compelled to come back by the force of your karma. Right now, we have no choice.
Right.
But at that point, you would have a choice how you would want to appear. You know, when you're completely enlightened, you would still be appearing for the benefit of other beings, but in different forms and by your own choice. You wouldn't be stuck in this cycle, this whirlwind.
Right.
Okay? So that's what a lot of that's getting to. And also, the highest kind of dedication that we can say is that, yeah, I'll be the last one.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be the one to hold the door for all beings. But if some of the articles will say, though, even though you may have that wish, that's not exactly how it's going to work, but that's the highest wish to have, that you will be the very last one, that everything that you will do will shepherd everyone through before you. But still, you will become enlightened. You know, it's not that you're going to stay and hold the door for all other beings, but you will certainly be able to return and help them from that more enlightened state.
Okay?
Okay, so next question. Any other questions about the definition of bodhicitta? Okay. So now, question number two. What are the two types of conventional bodhicitta? We talked before about, you know, these two types of bodhicitta. You don't have to have the exact name. And there's lots of different ways to call out these two types. But just discuss, if you can, what they are with your audience. And I'll let you know when we're done.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody need more time? Okay, so who wants to describe that one for the in the microphone? Yeah, give him a mic. I hear. Okay, what are the two types?
Oh, we were just talking about the absolute and the relative, and we really liked your analogy about being in New Orleans and driving towards New
okay.
Orleans. So absolute is the ability to do something or being in New Orleans,
uh-huh.
where relative is the wish to be there or the wish to do something. So.
Okay. Anybody else? So I think I've probably – those are the two right descriptions. The terms, though, would be aspiring – and then active, or aspiring and engaged. The absolute and the before I said, you know, there's these two types, conventional and ultimate. That's like the two huge groups. And then under conventional is aspirational, like you're wishing to get to New Orleans, you're on the way, and engaged or active, you're there. And further information about that might help, is that, you know, when we talked about this a little bit, and you've read in the articles that when aspiring a bodhicitta is incredibly powerful. It's more than like me right now. I have the wish. Of course, I have the wish to have bodhicitta. That's not the same. This when they the real wish that to have bodhicitta is so hugely developed that it would be with me much more than it currently is. It would be something that would be. I may have to generate it a little bit here and there, but it would be with me so much. It would be as though, okay, it would be really the analogy holds about the trip to New Orleans. When I was actually driving to New Orleans, I didn't have to remind myself very often that I was on the way. I didn't have to remind myself that I needed gas and get in the car. I was on the way. Maybe once in a while I might have spaced out listening to a song or something, but I was, you know, very much on the way. Once I'm in New Orleans, everything I'm doing is in New Orleans. So when you have engaged bodhicitta, then all of the activities you're doing, this bodhicitta is pervading all of them, even sleeping, even breathing. So every single activity you do is hugely virtuous because it's infused with bodhicitta. Whereas aspirational, even though it's still incredibly powerful, it's not the same. It's not quite, but you certainly need aspirational to have active. Yeah.
I was trying to describe this to somebody the other day, and I got stopped by thinking, what if someone were aspirational their whole life? They were very strongly aspirational. They really thought, yes, I want to be enlightened. Yes, I want to help other people. And they never did a single thing to help somebody. Is that... That doesn't seem right to me.
Mm-hmm. If you really had aspirational bodhicitta, then I don't think it would be like that because you're... The way that Geshe was describing it to me, he said, you know, somebody like, I don't know who he said now, but that kind of person, their wish is so developed that even just being in their presence, you feel something. You feel this incredible peace and love around them. So people would be benefited just being in their presence. You may have felt like that with some mm-hmm. incredible person. So they would be beneficial to people. The advice that they might give you, the prayer they might say for you, would have a certain kind of power. The act of bodhicitta that we're talking about is not just like going and helping somebody or, you know, working out of the prison or something. Those are all wonderful things to do. But we're talking about active bodhicitta means you're engaged in those six perfections. So then you are fully engaged in those perfections. Everything you're doing is even more powerful than like right now. If I'm practicing generosity, yes, it's a wonderful thing. But if I have bodhicitta and I'm practicing generosity, it's just like that on steroids. It's so difficult for us to even grasp. So, I think the way that you're almost asking it now is like if it was me and I'm just sitting there day in and day out thinking about bodhicitta but not doing anything for anybody. But if I truly had aspirational bodhicitta, if I was truly on the road to New Orleans, every step I make is just getting me closer. So if I truly had developed this intense wish, it's you know, like a bomb going off in my mind. So then everything that I'm doing is bringing me closer to that day when I'm fully engaged in it. So I'd still be doing things to help people. It's just that I don't have that complete bodhicitta wish hasn't bloomed in me entirely, so that all my deeds are infused with it. I'm still doing good things for others. I'm still engaged in helping others, just like I am now, you know. Okay. All right, so not all of the questions that are on your list am I asking. So I think I took a couple of them off just because I knew it would take longer than it, everything takes longer than it does, right? So the next question that I've got to ask you all is, name the two methods for developing bodhicitta and as many details as you can about these methods. So remember we talked about like kind of the two lineages, the two methods for developing bodhicitta, the two teachers. As many things as you can remember from that. And I see the advantage of sitting in a little group because you kind of like hear everybody else's answers. That's fine. That's fine. It's like open classroom answers. But name as much as you can remember about those two main lineages and methods for developing bodhicitta. If you can remember the teachers' names, if you can remember anything about what they're called or any of the practices with those things, see if it rings a bell. There were two main teachers. Their tankas are around here somewhere. And I had you all do a meditation on one of them. All these different things you do, and then you do this. One thing leads to another. How'd that go? Is it, yeah, a little trickier. You remember anything from it?
The little eavesdropping. Start coming back.
Jenny, the bus is handy.
Yeah, we basically eavesdropped and then started just spouting out information as it came to our brain. So we think we're close, but not too close.
Okay. Anything you all want to share so I can nudge you a little bit?
Does it have anything to do with you're not number one, like everyone else is number one?
That's definitely part of it. You're not number one. First meditation. It's not all about me. Okay, anything else anybody remembers? You got something, right? Where's the mic?
Yeah. I did Tonglen, which was a Tisha, the seven causes, one effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the seven causes, one effect.
Okay.
Tonglen with Shanti Deva. Sorry, the other one was a Tisha.
Okay. All right. Remember Lama Atisha's name? So there were these two. Ryan, is that what you were saying?
Yeah.
So Lama Atisha, the seven-point cause and effect, which we'll cover that in a minute. That was this, and I'll go through that in a minute. And then Shanti Deva is exchanging yourself with others. So Tonglen is this very visual meditation that we do to exchange self with others, but exchanging self with others is also something, both of these are things that you can practice all day long in just your thinking, the way that you walk around and what your wishes are, what your thinking is. Exchanging self for others really is about cherishing others more than we cherish ourselves, or cherishing them the same that we cherish ourselves. Just starting to cherish other people, and so that gets to the not being number one. Yeah. And so I have on this little handout, I'm going to give you some points to remember about the seven-point cause and effect, and we'll go through that in a minute. And that if you're really able to exchange self for others, then you wouldn't need the 7-point cause and effect. But really, practically, even the 7-point cause and effect, you can do it as this very linear meditation, but you can also take pieces of it throughout the day and think about how all beings have been my mothers. Okay, that's something you can think about all day long. And then, you know, each one of these things will lead to another one. Okay, and actually I was thinking while you all were answering that a little bit more about your question about aspirational bodhicitta. So I think a good example of this is Mother Teresa, who there's many people doing wonderful things and have very similar houses of charity that she had in India, right? The fact that she made such an impression on people could very possibly be due to that wish that she's developed internally, her own mind state. So even though if you just looked at it on paper, the things, the number of people she's helped and fed and clothed might be very similar to somebody else in another part of the world. But why does she have this incredible effect on people who are in her presence, you know, or who watch her do something? And that could again be coming from her state of mind, her heart. That's the thing that's so hard to describe. So when I showed Geshe-la the documentary of her, he was like, yeah, so that's probably a bodhisattva, you know, or somebody who now, because of that huge wish and is conjoined with some of those deeds of a bodhisattva, it's going to look different than somebody else who may be also doing wonderful things, no doubt about it. How many lifetimes has she been doing things like that that then led to the lifetime of Mother Teresa, that when she's doing maybe some of those same, on a mundane level, looks the same, saving somebody, feeding somebody, clothing somebody, but it has such a different effect. Everybody around the world knows who she is. That's the difference. So it's those activities, but conjoined with that state of mind, it's just, I don't know if I'm being articulate, but, okay, yeah, okay. Sound effects help. Okay, so let's go on to another question here. List some of the advantages of self-cherishing. I'm sorry, list some of the disadvantages. The disadvantages of I'm number one. We already know those other ones. And the advantages of cherishing others. And think big picture. How do these things get in the way of your enlightenment, other people's happiness?
Disadvantages would be the inability to develop compassion. That's what I think. I don't know if anything I got so far. Advantages of cherishing others. So clearly, we like developing kindness and generosity and the ability to practice.
Think long range, big, samsara versus enlightenment.
What is the definition of good action?
Virtuous or happiness.
What's good karma?
Good karma. Oh, yes. Creating good karma.
Actually, in bad karma. Bad karma.
Oh, well, she's saying cherish and others. Oh, it's also cherish.
Most people finish with that? Okay, so list some of the disadvantages of self-cherishing. And when I say self-cherishing, it means selfishness, basically, you know? The I'm number one, what's in it for me attitude. What are some of the downsides of that? Anybody want to answer that? I heard y'all talking.
Suffering.
a suffering. Can you elaborate a little bit? I know as soon as that mic comes, it's like, no, okay, you tell me and I'll repeat it. You don't have to use the mic. It creates suffering. Okay. Okay. Grasping at our ego, and it creates more suffering. Anybody want to elaborate on that? Build from there? It's a perfect start.
Bad karma.
Okay, it creates bad karma. How? Give her the mic. Give her the mic.
Well, it seems to me that you'd have an opportunity to cherish others and create good karma, so self-cherishing would be creating negative karma, non-virtuous karma for yourself.
Okay. Right, right. And I think, you know, we probably have lots of examples in our lives, right, when sometimes it's hard to even think, like, well, what's so wrong about cherishing? It sounds such a lovely word. You know, I love myself. But how does that get in our way? What's the problem of being selfish? You know, it creates these negative mind states, and these negative mind states are harmful to ourselves and to the people around us. You know, I mean, just real simple things you can probably saw throughout your day, right? So then those negative mind states keep us locked in to samsaric existence, you know. Okay. And anything else along those lines you want to add? I mean, it's pretty much in line with what you were saying, that we're not able to help others when we're very focused on what I want. I mean, because all of our energy is going into that and not into the larger picture. And so then we can't achieve Buddhahood. You know, I was so impressed that day that it snowed, because, I mean, people, I thought, I got home, luckily I got home, lived 5 miles from my job, so I got home really quickly, and then I just put on all these clothes and I walked out, and every single street I walked onto was jammed with people, but they were all being so patient, I thought, for what a long ordeal. And me and this guy, we were just like walking down Hillsborough Street, giving everybody the news of how, because people thought it was just Hillsborough Street that was jammed. I was like, no, it's everywhere. They were like, I got to get off of this. I was like, it's not going to help. So I saw people doing such incredibly nice things for each other and really taking their time and being patient. And when they weren't, you know, it's obviously there's going to be a problem for everybody. So I thought it was a really good example. All right, what about the advantages of cherishing others? And you don't have to use the mic. I can repeat if you're just mic shy, mic phobic. We've already said some of them. It increases our happiness, not only right now, but also in the future. And obviously it's going to increase other people's happiness. And bodhicitta is only developed through cherishing others. So, you know, how do we develop this bodhisattva mind state? It's going to be, you know, step by step by step. So it's not like we've got to wait till we wake up in one life and all of a sudden, oh, wow, now I'm bodhisattva. It's not going to happen like that, you know. All the deeds we're engaging in now will one day be the same as a bodhisattva. There'll be a tipping point, and then we'll become a bodhisattva. We'll have developed bodhicitta through the actions that we're engaged in now. And so then when we're engaged in some of those same kind of actions, they'll have just so much more power, you know. Yeah, anything else along those lines that we want to chat about?
One of the things from the reading that I thought was really interesting was, if you're doing good things, you're not doing bad things.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're busy doing virtuous actions, then you're not creating, you're not doing non-virtuous actions and creating bad karma. So,
right.
So I thought that was really, you know, to me, I was like, hey, I never thought about it that way.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, there was this one time this week, I think I was in the grocery store, and I was in a bad mood, and I could feel myself, I said, just hold your tongue. At least if you hold your tongue, that's something. And then because I did, I can't remember what it was anymore. That's the other interesting thing. But so then when I was able to hold my tongue, I was able to work with my mind, and then I could slowly just all vanished. Yeah, there was something else I was going to say. Oh, I remember when Geshe-la taught me this one mantra. It was way early when he first came here. And so it seemed like endless, you know, to accumulate 100,000 of these mantras. And this was short. It didn't take me that long, but it still felt like, oh, my goodness. I have to say this thing in my mind over and over and over. Oh, my God. And I was complaining about it to him. And he was like, yeah, but just think all the things that you're not thinking.
Yeah.
It was exactly like, it was just replacing, you know, just think.
Good, yeah.
Just think about all the things that you're not thinking and all the crap that you think when you walk to the grocery store. He said, so now you're saying this mantra over and over and over again. And pretty soon it did change to where I couldn't wait to say it, you know, when I walked around. So, okay, last question, which there is no, you're the ones with the answer to this, is what, you know, tell your group, your partner, what, if anything, has been meaningful to you about studying this topic? Okay. So then if there's somebody who hasn't been in the class, you can kind of, you're an advertisement. So what, if anything, has been helpful to you about studying this topic? How'd you do?
Oh. What? On the test, you did all right? No? What do you think? You got half right? Oh. So, I have a feeling you did, you know, at least half right. So, yeah, and you can give me the completion card. Okay. So this is a big break between this one and the next module. So we can talk about how I can get that card. Yeah.
A lot of books, but I didn't finish off.
Robbie? Okay.
And I was worried if I could do it like that.
I'm sure you can. Yeah, I'll talk to Robbie. It was the one right before me?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure.
Yeah.
He had people write a paper.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I'll talk to him. I'll let you know. I think I have your email address still. If you don't hear from me, you still have my email address?
Okay.
Get in touch. Okay. Anybody want to share anything for our home viewing audience and for the rest of the people on the bus? Anything that was meaningful to you about studying this topic that you'd like to share? Oh, you got a volunteer.
Well, I'll go ahead and talk.
Since you have the mic. Somebody volunteered you. We could play past the microphone.
The first thing I was saying was the ability to get to actually practice Tonglen and, like, mm-hmm. actually going through what the meditations were like.
Okay.
I'd actually read about it before, about a year ago. Like, oh, that's a cool concept, and it never actually made sense
uh-huh.
until relating it to this class
yeah.
and getting to do it. So that was my first thing. And
okay.
we discussed all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
Who wants the mic?
Who wants the mic? Who wants to share? Add to that little pile or pool. Yeah, back in the back. Back of the bus.
Well, I'm so happy that you've taught this class and that this class is available. I didn't realize it was part of a whole 14-month program. This, I feel like I came in on the exact topic that I needed.
Okay.
I'm a food evangelist, and I've been working on trying to move what I do to the next level. And I feel like I've gained some real courage and practical skills that will let me think about other people and just say, well, so what if I fail? So, you know, as long as I take that step-by-step thing, and then I'll make some progress, and maybe I won't. So it has been very practical as well as very soothing.
Oh, good.
So thank you.
Good. And, you know, just like, you know, I was telling you before, like when Geshe-la and I feed the ducks, and then we say, you know, in our next life, maybe we'd be able to teach them mantras. And, you know, I would, you know, anybody who's doing the kind of work that you're doing or anything that we do all day long, just, you know, have that wish at least that, you know, if I can't do this now, may I be able to do this better then. Mm-hmm. And remember to dedicate the merit that you're creating all day long. You know, to just like we do at the end of the class here. You know, it's gold. So you want to be able to, you know, that it's like a seed that you've planted, and how do you want it to blossom? So, you know, take time to recall that. Yeah. Anything else?
Come on, Al.
Yeah. Up here. Oh yeah.
Linda volunteered me.
Okay.
We were talking, and I would say that one of the things that have been meaningful for me, and actually why I think we started coming to the Kadampa Center, was I'm just searching for some peace.
Mm-hmm.
And through this module, just realizing that, you know, that you are not number one, that everyone else is number one, and that everyone else's feelings and needs are equal to yours.
Yeah.
I find myself, it's sad how often we can be mad and angry over something that is so insignificant and unimportant.
Yeah.
And I catch myself now, you know, in those moments, and I'm like, you don't have anything to be angry about, and kind of turn it around. So it's peaceful.
Yeah. It's amazing when we, you know, can see that point where we have a choice, because often it doesn't feel like we have a choice. You know, we're just following whatever our mind is telling us, and off we go. And Susan, you ahead. Oh, okay, great. Yeah, he said what I wanted to say, too. Okay, so I'm going to pass out the little answer key. There's like this extra sheet that somehow, I was trying to save paper by printing it front and back. Somehow I printed out an extra sheet, so you get an extra sheet. You wanna, yeah. While that's being passed out, there were a couple things I wanted to remember to tell you all. I don't know why, but they kind of fit with, everything fits with everything. So, you know when you see other people, or you prostrate three times before the altar, or you say prayers three times, and why is this three? I heard His Holiness give a really good answer, which I try now to include, like before I prostrate to the altar three times, which is that the first time you think of, okay, so you're taking refuge, you think of your life and your future lives in samsara. May I always be able to take refuge, and then you do your prostration, because that's what you're doing. The second one is even when you have escaped samsaric existence and you're in that state where you're no longer having to come back, but you're not completely enlightened yet. I take refuge, you know, may I become a Buddha for the sake of all sentient beings, right? You make your prostration. And then the third one is taking refuge so that even at that point can you reach complete enlightenment. Does that make sense? Am I being articulate? So it's just kind of the mindset that you would have during each one of those, each of those three, and you're just kind of raising it up. I really like that, because again, it's all about stages, one thing leading to another. And the other thing I just wanted to say was that, you know, I remember when I first came to the Kadampa Center, when we were in that little basement, and I saw a picture of the Dalai Lama on the altar, and there was a little bowl in front, and people had put dollar bills, and I thought that was so funny. Like, are they going to mail it to him, or is he going to reach out and pick it up? It's only like $5, you know. I mean, what is that going to do? And I just was like, I don't really get this. And then somebody explained it to me in a way that really, really helped, especially as I started to understand karma a little bit more. It's that if you take something, even if it's a wish, it doesn't have to be a dollar bill, but we put a lot of feeling behind our dollar bills, and we have a lot of work that went into our money. So you're trying to make this connection to this being. You know, it's not compulsory. It's somebody that you want to be more like, that you want to have more of a connection to. And, you know, it's this one person who's on the other side of the world, and you're not going to see that often and probably isn't going to be in the same building with you. So you're wanting to make this connection. You're taking something that's valuable to you, and you are now mentally, whether he gets it in his hands or not, you're offering it to him. That alone, again, that's the power of the mind. That alone, that action, creates this connection. So that's also why the offerings on the altar, that's also why you can mentally offer things. You know, you can offer imaginary things. You can offer things you have, things you don't have. Things that are tangible, things that are intangible. Things that are yours, things that are other people's. You got a really nice necklace on? I just offered it. You know, it's like that. It doesn't, I might not take it off your neck and put it on the altar, because then that would be creating some negative karma. But I could also take a dollar bill and, you know, and with a lot of love, put that on the plate and offer that to whoever I want to. And that creates that karmic connection. Make sense? Okay. And offerings are like oil for our wheels to moving towards bodhicitta. You know, we need good merit. We need merit to create wisdom, to create bodhicitta. All right, I want to read this one answer here. I really like this about the seven-point cause and effect. So I'm just going to read this in case you, for people at home, but also in case you don't want to read it. Again, it's from Lama Atisha, and he's saying that with this, this is a different person who gave this test, wrote this from the FPMT. With this method, the seven-point cause and effect, each of the six causes progressively leads you on and helps you generate the next one until one experiences the effects of bodhicitta. Beginning with a foundation of equanimity, remember that's the base. You have to, beginning with a foundation of equanimity, we recognize all beings as mother. This leads to remembering the kindness of the mother. Remembering the kindness helps generate a wish to repay the kindness. The wish to repay the kindness naturally leads to a wish for their happiness, which is called great love. And great love, yeah, happy, but gosh, if they're going to have suffering as well, which is the reality of our contaminated existence, so then you're wanting more than them to have, you're wanting more than just great love. Great love leads onto great compassion, which is wishing them to be free from suffering and its cause. So in addition to wanting them to be happy, you're wanting them to be free of any suffering at all. And the wish to free them from suffering leads to this pure superior intention, which is a strong and really clear determination to do so, to do what you can. The first three causes are the basis of bodhicitta and the foundation of being able to benefit sentient beings. That's recognizing all sentient beings as mother, remembering their kindness, and wishing to repay their kindness. So you can think of them as threes, two sets of three. That's the basis for bodhicitta. Then the second three causes, real love, compassion, and superior intention, you become able to benefit others. When you really have meditated on all of these six causes, when you've really worked on generating them in your mind, then bodhicitta effortlessly arises. We start from a basis of equanimity or equilibrium, and then it lists the seven. Okay, so I think that's a helpful way to remember them, too, and to remember them throughout your day. Okay, so let's come back. I mean, you all can stay there if you want, but I'm going to go sit down. So if you want to move to another seat. You know, we talk about, so this is close to the end of the module cycle, but they're also interwoven because you can't have bodhicitta if you don't have really good refuge. You know, and I mean, it all, they're all mixed in together. And I remember telling Geshe, which he now tells people at the centers, when he was first talking about refuge and he was describing it, and I said, and he's talking about the altar and the things on the altar and how you take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. And I said, okay, so it's kind of like the things that you're prostrating to, that's your future self. And he said, he goes, yeah, I guess you're right. That is your future self. And so you're taking refuge in your future Buddhahood. You know, it's a powerful investment. Okay, so questions about any of the readings? I know that there's some questions because I got tipped off. Mr. Chris Baranski has the microphone. What's that?
I do.
Yeah.
Then go ahead.
No, go for it.
Okay.
People are fighting over the mic. All right, everybody, you'll get your chance. Just relax.
Give me that, Chris.
Okay.
In the article that Practicing a Good Heart, you said what would we like to discuss. And I just need some guidance on the part where I want to give all these problems back to my enemy, the selfish mind, and destroy it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, out of my selfishness, I've done things in past lives, et cetera. And the problem has been given to me by my selfish mind. So now instead of suffering by taking all these problems upon myself, I want to give all these problems back to my enemy, the selfish mind, and destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
Can you comment on that?
Say that last part again. I'll read that last sentence.
I want to give all these problems back.
I think write the one before that, maybe. The sentence before that.
This relationship problem has been given to me by my selfish mind.
Oh.
So now, instead of suffering by taking all these problems upon myself, I want to give all these problems back to my enemy, the selfish mind, and destroy it.
Okay. What I get from that is it's like not believing what your mind is telling you. You know, so your mind is like, whatever this example was, you know, creating some problems in a relationship because you've kind of accepted that what your mind is telling you, the story about the relationship and all of this, and you've kind of accepted that story, and now you're all upset or confused or angry or jealous or whatever the issue is. And instead of, you know, it's saying it's like your mind has given you those problems and you've accepted it, and now you have this problem. Instead of accepting that story, turning it around and letting that, trying to destroy your selfish mind rather than however it's manifested in your life. So instead of trying to solve that problem or make that person change, or you're trying to then turn all that energy and that onto your selfish mind.
So you're not really thinking about the problem, like he said this to me.
Right.
You're thinking, if I did not have this self-cherishing mind, how can I change that? I wouldn't have this issue.
Right. I mean, you still may have to do so. I don't want people to get the wrong idea. I mean, you still may have to do something externally.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, to work on destroying that selfishness. And so the energy that we put in into the external things and changing this, and I need to tell that person this, and I have to go meeting here, and you know, the energy we put into changing the externals is extraordinary, or the other people. And instead, if we had half of that energy to destroying our selfishness, it would be just amazing if we spent even just 1 ounce of that energy on looking at where is this coming from, our self-cherishing. And so that's what I'm encouraging people to do, is to, during your day, walk around and look at, you know, how much of this is coming from selfishness. You know, I brought these books up, but we're not going to have time for it. But if you ever come to a Guru Puja, there's one section where they go through the Lam Rim outline, and there are these, I'll read it to you. There's these stanzas in there. So you can always just grab one of these books. They're under the altar there, and you can look through. And I think on page, I think like 83, there's the whole Lam Rim outline is in here. It's beautiful. At one point I had memorized it, and it really, really brought me a lot of peace. And then I forgot it. But there, on page 83, they have this whole thing about bodhicitta, developing bodhicitta, and generating compassion, and conventional bodhicitta, developing equanimity. And there's a couple lines, like if you just memorize them, you could bring them up throughout the day, and you'd be surprised how they help you. Like, this chronic disease of cherishing myself is the cause giving rise to my unsought suffering. Perceiving this, I seek your blessings to blame, begrudge, and destroy the monstrous demon of selfishness. That's really what that is getting to. It's not anything more complicated than that. You know, it's that may I perceive that, that this is what's creating my problem, this disease of self-cherishing. The mind that cherishes all mother beings and would secure them in bliss is the gateway leading to infinite virtue. Wow. Seeing this, I mean, if you really saw it that way, you would just be like, let me hurry. You just, everything would seem like a golden chance to cherish others. Seeing this, I seek your blessings to cherish these beings more than my life, even should they rise up as my enemy. Not easy, but, you know, even just to see it that way doesn't mean necessarily that, you know, you might still have to take certain actions. In brief, infantile beings labor only for their own ends, while Buddhas work solely for the welfare of others. With a mind understanding the distinction between the failings of one and the advantages of the other, we seek your blessings to enable me to equalize and exchange myself with others. So that one, I remember using that a couple of times when I was really upset that I didn't get to go on this trip. And I mean, there were lots of reasons that I was upset. Anybody listening to me would totally sympathize because it was unfair. But then, you know, that wasn't helping me any, really, just to have like a pep squad. It's kind of making it worse. But I could definitely get a lot of sympathy. And then I stopped and I repeated this in my mind, you know, that I was working only for my own happiness, completely, not even like a 1% for anybody else. So when I realized that, I thought, okay, now it made sense why this other person had done what they did. Now I started to see more choices. Do you know what I mean? I just started to see like there were a lot more choices in this, mostly in how I was looking at it, and things started to kind of fizzle. And since cherishing myself is the doorway to all torment, while cherishing my mother's is the foundation of all that is good, I seek your blessings to make my core practice the yoga of exchanging self for others. So, you know, saying this, I mean, even if it replaces our usual way of thinking for an hour, 10 minutes, I mean, it can't hurt. It leads us to creating more habits, because it's so easy to develop the other habits. We're encouraged to develop the other habits. We're cheered on to develop the other habits. I remember when I used to watch basketball when I first moved here, and what's his name? Tim Duncan was just playing at Wake Forest, and they thought he will never get into the NBA because he's not angry enough. And people were upset that he didn't get mad enough. I thought, he's playing a phenomenal game. Why do they care if he gets mad? But, you know, I mean, it was kind of sad to me that it encouraged to such a degree that, I don't know. So, I mean, that's on that level. Then you can just see it on everything around you. You're encouraged to have more self-cherishing. So to try to move against that tide for even a minute is huge. And that's what we need pep squads for. You know, that's what we need to think about and rejoice at the end of the day. And, you know, that we changed our mood for 1 minute. Wow. Caught ourselves. Or even if we didn't catch ourselves, we looked back on it and went, oh, yeah. Yeah. That's when I fell in that hole again. You know, that's huge. Any other questions? Or yeah. Yeah. Go for it.
Thanks. It's about each of us is completely responsible for the happiness of every sentient being. And then he goes through logic to bring that out. And I followed along, thought I was doing pretty well, and then it says, by thinking of history, we can also understand how in the past, millions and millions of people were killed because one person did not practice the good heart. So he's talking about I can't think of the word, where something starts and a wave of behavior, let's say, starts. Is that what he's saying?
Yeah.
Maybe I say something bad to you and then you... And then two people say something bad to someone else.
Sure, it could be like that, but it can also be, remember we were talking before about in a positive way, the mind, say, infused with bodhicitta is like the wind wafting the, maybe there's a little match that's lit, and now the wind of bodhicitta comes along and the whole mountain or whole hillside is ablaze, right? That's in a positive way, that wind, that mind stream of bodhicitta. Negative, it also be the same. So I mean, the classic example is, you know, is Nazi Germany. So maybe all the kindling was already there because there was people's upsetness and despair and anger was already laying there. And all they needed was one match, which was, you know, Hitler in the microphone. You know, so he had a platform to light that stage. And so if he had been practicing good heart, and he had been in that position, he might have been able to help all these people who were angry and suffering and poor and recovering from World War I to think of it completely differently. Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of like that. That you never know what... And so then on a smaller level, we never know the impact of our what we say, positively or negatively. You know what it's like. You're in a really bad mood, and one person in the grocery store smiles at you, and you're just like, you know, it feels like... You know, a bodhisattva just landed in front of you, and all they did was smile. And likewise, that another person kind of elbow you or do something mean to you, and it ruins your whole day. So the power of our actions is unbelievable. Okay, let's do a brief Tonglen exercise because we're going to be ending soon, and I thought that'd be a good one to end on. Any other questions that are? Did you have a question? Yeah. Tonglen. The spelling of Tonglen is T-O-N-G-L-E-N. And it means giving and taking. And first, we take. And, you know, there's some really wonderful writings about Tonglen. Pema Chodron has some really nice descriptions of Tonglen, because what you're trying to destroy with Tonglen is your blocks, your negativity, your self-cherishing mind. So when we do this, just to remind people, especially people who haven't done this before, you're not actually going to be taking on other people's karma or illnesses or whatever. It's all a visualization to remove it completely from them, and you can use that energy of it to try to imagine that it's the energy that you've taken on is destroying your problems. This is all supposed to be good. If anything, I mean, that's the one kind of rule of thumb. If any of the meditations or readings are disturbing you, then you know that somehow you've looked at it incorrectly. It's all supposed to be liberating you. It's not supposed to be about creating more problems. Okay, so get into your comfortable meditative posture. And we first start Tonglen with ourself. So whatever way it's easiest to do that, you can see a problem sitting in front of you that you have, or you can see yourself. If it's easy to visualize yourself sitting in front of you, see yourself sitting in front of you. And whatever issue you'd like to remove from yourself, maybe it's your self-cherishing, maybe it's all the obstacles between you and your complete enlightenment. Maybe it's just something small, some irritation that came up today. Take something that you feel ready to do. Because, again, we want to have guaranteed success. So take that issue, and what you're going to do is you're going to see that in the form of some black smoke. That's an obstacle. So then on your inhale, I'm just going to describe it first before you do it. You're going to inhale this smoke, and as you inhale it and it goes down through your lungs, you're imagining that it's bursting through all the problems. Again, this is a very visual imagination, a visualization, very, very clear and physical. So you can imagine those things inside of you and what's holding you back, self-cherishing or anger, jealousy, whatever it is. And the smoke is going to burst through all of those so that then you're completely pure light and you're going to exhale that light through you to embrace yourself. And you're going to go back and forth like that so that you are completely surrounded by this pure light of love and clarity. So take a few minutes to do that. Now take a minute to imagine someone or something else that you're going to do Tonglen with. If you can't think of anyone, do everyone in this room. It could be somebody in your life, somebody you don't know, somebody, it could be a whole country. And you're just going to imagine, again, this black smoke comes off and inhale it, let it burst through all of your problems, opening you up to this pure state of light that then you exhale and surround this other person with. Let that light infuse them so that their problem, their suffering is completely gone. And the two of you then are feeling just incredible peace, enlightenment, love. Now take a minute to dedicate all the merit that you've created by coming to this class, by sharing your thoughts, questions, by helping set up the room, by donating to the center, by thinking about these things so that you can become a happier person, peaceful person, which benefits yourself and others. Imagine that all the seeds you have planted by coming here even just today or through the whole module or through all of the modules, imagine all of that merit is like seeds, grains of rice. You can put them in the larger stream of all the holy beings and incredible people and all of their merit so that it's joined with theirs and it's just enormous and inseparable from that huge river of merit. And you can make a strong wish that it ripens as your complete enlightenment, that you're able to develop bodhicitta, realize emptiness, help people in more and more ways than it's hard to even comprehend at this point. But having the faith that it will, that one thing leads to another, that everything has a cause, and you dedicate the seeds to the cause that you most desire. And then just open your eyes when you're ready. And I just want to take a minute to thank you all, because it's, you know, not easy to come on Monday nights for you all. I'm so amazed that you all come on Monday nights regularly and participate and share, and it's been a pleasure to sit up here. You know, sometimes when I'm not here, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm ready, and is it Monday? But when I get here, I always have so much fun. I always leave energized and impressed, and you all really inspire me. So I hope you keep coming to DB, keep coming to the center. If you have any questions, let me know. And I think next Monday there's a Guru Puja here on Monday, and then I think there's a break for a while until the next module because our schedules, and then there's this Light of the Path retreat and everything. So just keep your eye on the calendar. Anybody have any questions before we quit? Yeah. Yes, it's usually on Monday night, and they, you know, they can be separate modules because we usually try to give the context of how they fit into the larger scheme of things. You can always find it on the center website, you know, what's going on, which module, but they do kind of build off of each other. They start a certain area of the teachings and build all the way up. But that doesn't matter. You can come at any point, and you'll certainly have plenty. And then you can always, you know, get the readings so you can catch up and look at things that are from other modules. And that way, too, you'll have all that information right there on that one disc. So you want to look up what are the seven causes. You know, you don't have to find that piece of paper I gave you. They're all on the disc. Okay? Any other questions? And, you know, and I should make that one more pitch, you know, that so all this is brought to you all basically free. You know, I certainly am not getting paid, and nobody's getting paid. Most centers charge, have a flat fee that they would pay, they would ask you to pay, but we rely on your generosity. So there's donation boxes out there, and that's what the center's been able to do. We took a big leap getting this place. There was a point where I was on the board then. It was, should we or should we not? Should we wait? Should we collect more money? And it was just like, you know what? If we buy the bigger space, people will come, and it sure happened. I mean, because we used to be in this tiny basement, and you know, it was full, and then it was getting a little bigger, but we didn't know that we could really do this. But we made the leap, and we've come a long way. So anyway, thank you all for your generosity and your time, and I hope to see you around.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.